So let us deal now with number one on the list.
The matter of the Kingdom of Cunningham, Sean and Johnson, court file number CB-22-89835.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
And good morning.
Good morning. And so I have read the material. Ms. Sack, how do I say your client's last name?
Tavel.
Okay, thank you. So I am very familiar with the rules with respect to striking pleadings and the law with respect to fiduciary obligations of lawyers. So I'm not sure how long you intend to be for your argument. Sir, you have King Sean on your screen. Is that how you're asking me to refer to you as?
Well, no, it's really just to define that I am acting in my sui juris capacity, so not as the artificial person.
So how do you want me to refer to you during our
Just Sean is fine.
Okay. So Sean, how long do you expect to be in reply?
Well, it depends on what, to be honest with you, Your Honor, I have no idea what they're going to be bringing, in defense of my reply factum. I think my reply factum is pretty self-explanatory. There is no court of record for this matter whatsoever. Not one document has been filed onto the record by the Bracebridge Courthouse. Like, if that isn't fraud, I don't know what is. Like, really, there is no excuse for it. There's an application from March 20, 2020. That's the first application made by Halla Tabel. She's got a direct order from the court.
Okay.
And
I want to hear your arguments, sir, but the way we're going to deal with it, just to be fair and be proper in procedure.
Of course.
This is a motion brought by your friend, Ms. Sack. So I'm going to hear from her first.
Okay.
And then I'm going to hear from you. But I do have to be cognizant that I have two other substantive hearings today that I have to get through. So I want to, what I want you to do is kind of focus on the issues as best you can with respect to the pleadings.
Okay.
This is a pleadings motion. So this is to strike the claim against Ms. Tabel for not disclosing any reasonable cause of action or any tenable cause of action.
Right.
And so, Ms. I just give me a second to get my Word document, and then what we'll do is we'll start your argument, okay? Now, I do have case lines open. So, sir, are you on, as a self-rep, you wouldn't have access to case lines?
No, I'm in there.
Are you okay? All right. So, what I would prefer we do for my notes is I would prefer that you would let me know where you are on case lines so that we're all on the same page.
Okay.
Okay? So, if you're going to refer me to something, then try to refer to the red numbers at the top of the top corner.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yep.
All right. So, we will be taking a break. It may be after Ms. Sack's argument. I'm expecting if you're a half an hour to 45 minutes, then the break would come actually after your argument. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. So as you're aware, this is a Rule 21 motion to strike the claim and dismiss the action being advanced on behalf of Ms. Tabel. If you go to bundle number 2, and it's page B-2-13, you will find... Sorry.
Give me a second again.
Yep.
Where is it in the bundle?
Bundle number 2.
Yep.
And it's at B-2-13.
Oh, this is the written statement claim?
Correct. This is the written statement of claim.
Yep. Okay.
So first thing to notice, of course, is the styled as claimant as opposed to plaintiff. It should, of course, be plaintiff. Is the Kingdom of Heaven Found a Shawn, an Express Trust organization. The prayer for relief against the all of the defendants starts at B-2-17, and what the Kingdom of Heaven, and I'm just going to short form it as the Kingdom of Heaven as opposed to Found a Shawn and Express Trust, but the Kingdom of Heaven is seeking monetary relief, interest pursuant to some notice of liability for breach of trust, and a property and a fine of an ounce of gold a month until the property is restored. Ms. Tabel's license and performance bond with the Law Society, a lien on the co-defendant's properties, a Porsche, email disclosure between what is referred to as the respondents, presumably that should be defendants, and other foreign interveners. The background to the statement of claim, or sorry, the background story is set out in the statement of claim. The action revolves around the death of Joachim Heinrich von Dien, who is the father of Sean, the defendant Tanya, and the defendant Michael. And the deceased father, who died in 2019, died intestate. And it's the position of the Kingdom of Heaven that the eldest son, Sean, was entitled to inherit the father's estate, and that the father had promised Sean that he would do so, and he was to inherit his home as well. As it relates to Ms. Tabel, the first mention of her is at B-2-23 in paragraphs 25 and 26. She's referenced as the lawyer for Ms. Johnson. And in the pleading, the Kingdom indicates that Sean refused to consent to her appointment as a state trustee without a will. Again, Ms. Tabel's referenced at paragraph 46, B-2-28, where there is reference to her serving Sean with the notice of application for the certificate of appointment to appoint Ms. Johnson as the estate trustee. In paragraph 51, Your Honor, this is the basis for the claim against Ms. Tabel, B-2-29, and that is she had a duty, an obligation to advise Ms. Johnson of her fiduciary obligations and to act in accordance with the rule of law and in the best interests of the entitled beneficiaries. Yes. So it's Ms. Tabel failed to properly advise Sean's opposition and or Sean's sister in relation to matters relative to the father's estate.
Yes.
In paragraph 53, the other aspect of the liability of Ms. Tabel, she had a duty, an obligation to post a performance bond to ensure compliance with fiduciary obligations and the rule of law. The next important document, Your Honor, can be found at tab bundle 22, tab 8.
Just give me a second.
No, sorry. I don't mean bundle. I've got you to the wrong bundle here.
Yeah, you're talking number 22 on the list of case lines, right, Tabby?
Yeah, no, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. I mean, bundle 8, which was tab 6.
So I don't see these by way of bundles, so you just call.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah,
okay, so tab B-2-64, which is tab 6, to the motion record.
Yeah, okay, so that's the April 7th, 2022 letter?
Correct. That's the communication between the registrar and her honor. And there is, at the bottom of that, the endorsement of her honor, Justice Casullo, which says, having reviewed the affidavit of Tanya Johnson, sworn March 24, 2022, as well as the endorsement of Woodley J, dated June 4, 2020, and the notice of objection of King Sean, House of Vandamme, I'm satisfied the notice of objection should be vacated, given the value of the estate and estate trustee is not warranted, certificate may issue, an order dispensing with bond. So the court has struck the notice of objection filed for the application for probate and dispensed with the bond.
May I object here for a moment, Your Honor?
No, you may not.
Okay.
I'll listen to you in a few minutes.
Okay.
The formal order, Your Honor, is found at tab 5 as it relates to the dispensing of the bond, and that's
B2-61. B2-61?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And then the actual order is at B2-62,
okay,
which is the order of Justice Casullo expressly providing that the administration bond is dispensed with in connection with the application of Ms. Johnson to be appointed the estate trustee.
Okay.
The appointment of Ms. Johnson as estate trustee without a will pursuant to the certificate granted can be found at B-2-322.
Great.
So Ms. Johnson has been duly appointed by the court the estate trustee of her father's estate, and she was appointed without a will. So our position, Your Honor, quite simply, is that the claim against Ms. Tabel with respect to her duty to post a performance bond is a collateral attack on the order of Justice Casullo that we just saw and the duly issued certificate of appointment and is therefore an abusive process. The allegation that Ms. Tabel owed some sort of duty of care or duty to, and it's not even Sean, it's the Kingdom of Heaven found to Sean, is not viable and does not disclose a cause of action, including because the Kingdom of Heaven lacks capacity and is not a juridical entity.
Right, it's not a legal entity at all.
It's not a legal entity. And certainly the Kingdom is not a beneficiary under Father's will. So the test, and you know, I'm sure Your Honor's well acquainted with the test, but if we go to my book of authorities, the test is clearly expressed in the Sills case, which starts at, which is B-2-102.
Just a second, I'm not at your bullet stories yet. Just
yeah.
Which case are you referring to?
So the Sills apps.
Oh, yes.
Secure transaction. So the well-known test enunciated in Hunt versus Carey is at B-2-109, paragraph 15. It has to be plain and obvious that the claim will fail, and you can assume the facts as pleaded are true.
Yes.
In the Sills case, the court was dealing with a novel duty of care argument. The family of a child taken into protective custody, taken into care, was suing the treatment facility and its employees. And in this case, the court found that the treatment facility and its employees owed no duty of care to the family of the child. And at paragraph 21 of this decision, the court recognizes that since there's no legal duty, it's obviously plain and obvious that the claim will fail. And as a result, the Rule 21 motion in this case was dismissed. In this case, Your Honor, you of course do not have to make a determination as to whether a legal duty is owed by Ms. Tabel to the Kingdom of Heaven, because it's well settled that a lawyer owes no duty of care to opposing parties, and the only duty of care owed is to his or her clients. And I put in our brief and refer you to the Baymark is at B-2-128, which stands for that principle and cites the Geo Kluth case of the Divisional Court, which speaks to that. There's, of course, many other cases that speak to that, but in paragraph 32 and in paragraph 33, the well-enunciated and well-established and well-settled principle that a solicitor owes no duty to the opposite party is set out. As a result, I submit it's plain and obvious that the claim that the Kingdom of Heaven has made against Ms. Tabel cannot possibly succeed. As well, Your Honor, with respect to the performance bond issue, if there was any doubt about that, in paragraph 12 of my factum, which is at B-2-67, where that's where it starts, but paragraph 18, the Estates Act imposes the obligation to post a bond only on the person who is being granted the administration unless otherwise ordered. Of course, in this case, Justice Casullo otherwise ordered and dispensed with the bond. There is no obligation or entitlement in law on a lawyer for a party being appointed under a certificate of appointment of a state trustee, either with or without will, to post a bond. The entire action is an attack on the order of Justice Casullo, and the certificate of appointment granted to Ms. Johnson without a will. There has been no challenge to those orders, no appeals of those orders, and to the extent that Sean or the Kingdom of Heaven, which was the, and I use the word entity loosely, which was the entity that filed the notice of objection, has in any way sought to challenge, appeal, set aside, any of those things. So and the other thing that I pause to mention here is the Kingdom's position that Sean was the rightful sole heir of the father on an intestacy is quite simply untenable in law. Part 2 of the Succession Law Reform Act sets out very clearly intestate succession. And on an intestacy, of course, the three siblings, Sean, Ms. Johnson, and Michael Von Den, would share equally. So his position is entirely untenable and is a collateral attack on the orders already granted. I have also included the City of Toronto CUPE case, which is at tab 4 of our book of authorities. starts at B-2-143. At paragraph 35 of that decision, the court confirms the inherent jurisdiction to prevent an abuse of the process of the court. At paragraph 37, the court expresses it as a flexible doctrine, but one circumstance in which it may apply is where the subject litigation is, in essence, an attempt to relitigate what a court has already decided. That's precisely what's happening here. And then the BC case that is referred to, a Supreme Court of Canada case, at paragraph 28, notes that the rule against collateral attack is to protect the fairness and integrity of the justice system by preventing duplicative proceedings. And that's exactly what's happening here. Finally, Your Honor, on the Kingdom of Heaven's capacity to sue, we have at tab 7 of the Book of Authorities, page B2274, the Jackson and Toronto Police Association case, and paragraph 18 of that case sets out the question of whether a party has capacity to be sued, or I submit to sue, it's identical, requires a narrow determination. Is it a natural person? Is it a corporation? Or is it a body given capacity by legislation? None of those things apply here. And the final reference, Your Honor, is to the Grant versus Town of Collingwood case, which is at tab 8. And that's at B2-281. The legal capacity issue is not impacted by a plaintiff's belief in their alleged legal capacity. Either someone has capacity or they don't. And the Kingdom of Heaven, quite simply, does not have capacity. So those are my submissions. And I don't want to anticipate Sean's argument, but I want to mention, of course, that no evidence is admissible on a motion such as this. And I suspect what we're going to hear is all sorts of things that purport to be evidence, which should not be considered. The narrow exercise here is.
You'll have to trust that I understand the limited what I'm to look at in a motion to strike the pleadings, and the limited material I'm to look at in a motion to strike the pleadings. One question before I turn it over to Sloan is,
yes,
your capacity argument. I expect that you're raising that for two purposes. One, because it should be struck for on that basis, but the other reason is that's why you're also asking for with prejudice, because there would never be capacity by that plaintiff, right? You're not asking for a with prejudice order on any legal entity, right? I mean, I'm not saying that another motion to strike wouldn't be successful, but for a with prejudice order, I'm assuming you're dealing with just the stated claimant in the claim.
I think so. And were the claim to be reconstituted, I would argue all the other grounds, but
yes.
I don't think that it would be appropriate at this point to contemplate other plaintiffs. So
that's right. And so I just wanted you to know that if I do grant an order, and I'm not saying I will or will not, but if I do grant an order and I do grant it with prejudice, it would just be for the stated claimant that is currently before me.
Understood.
Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Sean, you're going to have to forgive me because it's very strange to be using first names in the court, and so I'm going to stumble a little bit over that, not to be.
Please don't worry about it. If
wishes.
It's more comfortable, you can call me sir. I like sir. I don't like mister. Okay, that's and frankly, Your Honor, it's because I truly have studied quite seriously about how to defend that particular character, that artificial person. I understand the difference, what the position of office is that Mr. represents. That is not a position of office I wish to be holding, respectfully. And so if the name reflects a position of office an individual is holding, then I think it's important that it be expressed properly in these courts.
You have to understand, though, sir, that when I write my decision,
yeah,
I have to put who is representing who.
Correct.
And so I would be putting that, you know, Ms. Sack is counsel for Ms. Tabel.
Right.
And I do have to use your legal name.
No. My lawful name is King Sean House Vonden. And that is officially recognized by the Registrar General. I can show you letters from that office if you like. And also from the Ministry of the Attorney General. So
okay, well, you can take quibble with that. I'm telling you that that's not the substance of the matter before us. So
the substance of the matter before us is a trust claim. And the matter, in my understanding, the subject matter of the claim determines the jurisdiction of the court. And I'm here to fulfill a trust obligation that's very clear in the information for court use form that was filled out with the courthouse. And what I would suggest right off the bat, Your Honor, is that this is in fact an attempt at abuse of court power by the moving party in this particular situation, because the court has ruled on this. Justice Woodley has already provided, or sorry, Justice Gomery has already provided a denial endorsement to a request to dismiss under 2.1.016, and she has identified King Sean, House Von Dan, Hand of Stephen, Kingdom of God as the trustee and executor for the man's trust, for Sean Von Dan's trust, a private family trust that is designed and created to protect the person, Sean Von Dan, and Joachim Von Dan, which is my father. So there are two legal entities here, Your Honor, that are being protected by the trust, that are being represented by a trustee, who is me. And that's why the distinguishing between King Sean House Von Dan, the trustee, versus the artificial person who is a beneficiary of that trust. Now, these arguments are all very clearly explained in my reply factum. And what I would like Your Honor to know, without me asking to bring any evidence forward, because I do understand those rules, and I believe that the evidence that has been presented so far by the moving party is absolutely incomplete. They cannot show an endorsement without showing the full application that was shown to the judge, the letter that allegedly accompanied it, because they state on April 27th, there was an accompanying letter. They also say in the same statement of defense that this accompanying letter that has a date of April 7th was also sent on March 24th, and that these two documents were filed together. They say at one instance in their statement of defense that I was served with an application dated March 24th that included a cover letter to the court, even though the cover letter is dated April 7th, and they insist that they served that on me, including an endorsement from Justice Woodley dated from June 4th, 2020, that they said was binding on a brand new application, never filed with the court. No CV number on it, no registrar's signature, an entirely fake document, Your Honor. And I took that to the court and I asked them, like, what is going on here? And they said, well, this document hasn't been filed with the court. And so what she's done is she's got a couple of endorsements, but not one piece of paperwork has been filed with the court since their first application was denied. And the first application was denied because the court was requiring my consent. And I believe that the reason that the courts were requiring my consent is because I took care of making sure this trust was on the record with the Minister of Justice and Attorney General long before my father even died. I promised my father I would do that. And when I went to the registrar to file this claim, I was there a week before I drafted this claim. And I asked the registrar, is it possible for me, as a claimant, to bring a claim before these courts in the name of my trust? Yes, you may. Okay. Thank you. And then when I brought it and had it drafted, I asked them, is it okay that it's handwritten? Is it legible enough? Because if not, I will get it typed, but I wish to have a handwritten letter for my family. Like, this is a family document for me. So I wanted it to be kind of historical and, you know, special. So I asked if it was okay if it was handwritten, I would submit, and I told them that there is an online version as well, so that they can print a typed version. And then my understanding, Your Honor, is that these are courts of equity. All of the superior courts of Ontario are congruent, inherent, concurrent jurisdiction. And every single court in Canada is a court of equity first. It can't be anything else, because every single code, statute, act that Canada creates is allegedly to defend the charter rights and inherent rights of Canada's people and the world's people. Now, those are the primary trust documents that state actors in Canada are bound by. And the minister, you know, Minister of Justice and whatever under 24.1 provisions allows this court to, you know, inherit whatever jurisdiction is required in order to compel performance in accordance with Canadian law to the trust obligations. The fact of this matter is, Your Honor.
I want you to focus. This is not a motion to strike your entire pleading. That's not the form.
No, I understand that. But I want you.
The only matter is whether or not Ms. Tavel.
Yeah.
You can actually claim against Ms. Tavel.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the background. I appreciate you giving me the background. And I did read your material, so I
thank you.
Understand.
Okay.
You've heard your friend indicate about, the law, the legal principles.
Right.
The tests. Are you going to be touching on any of those?
Well, yes, because with respect to all of that being, that is all beside the point if there's no court fraud. Right? I mean, if she did do her job and everything that she says to you just now in that statement is true, then sure. Those statutes and whatever may apply. But with respect to, the truth of it, that's the entire issue here. And that's why it's so important that she brought this motion immediately, because they're not providing any discovery of facts. They don't want to show me any receipts made into the court. They don't want to show me any application with a court signature on it that's been filed with the registrar. There is not one document that's been filed with the court, and I know this for a fact, because I've been in contact now with the Bracebridge Courthouse, who's allegedly taking care of this. And they only began responding to me, Your Honor, after I received the statements of defense, learning for the first time, that there's an endorsement against me by Casello I know nothing about. And that was made on May 6th. How would I not know about that? Does a lawyer not have a duty and an obligation to at least serve me with notice of this new endorsement that's come down? You would think, right? But no, nothing. That was May 6th. I put them on notice May 29th and said, can you please let me know when you intend to file this application? Because I would like to object. And I can't object to an application that isn't before the court.
I thought you filed an app, a notice of objection, sir. I saw on the material.
Well, okay.
Filed.
I tried to file an objection with the Ottawa Courthouse, and they said that they could not accept it because there is no application in the system. I will have to check with the Bracebridge Courthouse. That's what happened. It was sent back to me because there was no application in the system. So then I started contacting the Bracebridge Courthouse, and they just said, no, sorry, can you check back in a couple of weeks? We haven't had a chance with COVID delays entered in the system yet. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, it hasn't been entered in the system, then I guess no determinations are going to be made. And that's exactly what they wanted me to think. Well, the truth of it was there was lots of determinations being made because it's not entered in the system, and they had no intent to enter it into the system. It's still not in the system to this day.
Sir, can I just ask you...
There's two certificates as well.
Well, do you have case lines? Can you access number 7... of the moving party group of documents?
Number 7.
It says number 7, it actually says tab 5.
Okay, hang on. I'm seeing a very long, so B2, 5?
No, it's tab 5, B261.
B261, oh my goodness.
Why don't I just share my screen? Madam Registrar,
that would be.
You,
yeah, that would
you
be.
Can you allow me to share my screen, please?
Because my belief is that my sister, essentially in any application that she's made to the court, she's been lying about the assets of the estate, she's been lying about the true value of the property, and not one other beneficiary has ever seen any documentary evidence of anything.
Can you see, sir, this document?
I can.
On it?
Yes.
And do you see it that as I'm scrolling down, there's a stamp?
I do.
That says Bracebridge?
Right. This is what I'm saying, Your Honor. It's not actually filed with the court.
Okay.
So why is that? This endorsement was never... So the instructions that were given to Halla Tabel, okay, in her first application, state very clearly that she is to make sure she has my consent to the application, make sure that she has my consent to dispense with a bond, and then to refile her materials with the court along with that notice showing the errors in the application, and then she would be, of course, required to submit all of these new endorsements that she has to get around the my consent to the application first, and then to get around the consent to the request for a bond. But that's what I mean. It was never filed with the court.
Ms. Tabel doesn't take instructions from you. She's Ms. Johnson's.
I understand that.
Okay, but you just said that the instructions Ms. Tabel had was that she was not to file this without your consent. She was not to do this without...
No, that's from the court. That's what Halla was told to do. This is a letter from the court to Halla. To Halla Tabel.
Okay.
Advising her what the rules of the court are with respect to this application. And she has not followed the rules of the court. That is the fiduciary obligation I'm speaking of. Not of a trespass upon the trust in this particular claim. I'm talking about her trust obligations to the court to make sure that she's following the rules. 1.09 states that she can't have any audience with any court judge or any person concerning my interests without my prior knowledge and consent. Where did she obtain my consent to have any of these meetings with any of these judges? Or any authorities of the court? Or make any, you know, application that wasn't being filed with the court? And here's my question for you, Your Honor. If allegedly all of these applications have been made, there was one apparently in 2020, there was apparently another one in 2024, if there is nothing filed onto the system, if there's no public court of record, then who's accepting the money for these? And where is the receipt? And why does neither the court nor Tala or nor Halla wish to produce one? Because they're not filing these with the court. It's all fraud. That's what I'm trying to say. And they're doing a very good job of it because it all looks very convincing. And I'm not saying that Justice Casullo did anything wrong, because Justice Casullo would have no way of knowing that these documents are not filed with the court and that she's violating a complete court order because she's not presenting the whole story to him, to the justice. She's only giving part. If she doesn't give the context of the first endorsement by Woodley, then that's also taken out of context because she doesn't include that first application that's saying all kinds of horrible things about her older brother, asking to have him excluded from the proceedings to pay for her costs and to be denied his own right to make an application. Justice Woodley did not speak to one of those requests. Instead, she ordered Halla to serve that application and the endorsement upon me and to file it with the court. She never filed it with the court. She did serve it on me. And when I told my sister that that was not a flattering endorsement, especially with an affidavit that was telling all kinds of lies to discredit my character, I said, if I object, Tanya, I said, you've got perjury in an affidavit. That's going to look really bad. Can you just, you know... And she said, okay, I'll withdraw. So then they allegedly withdrew an application that was never even filed. It's all smoke and mirrors. That's what I'm saying. They didn't even file the application and the endorsement from Justice Woodley, which the previous court order from Halla in her first application had told her she must.
From Justice Woodley, you're speaking. No, I'm trying to see if it's in the
materials. It is in their materials. I'm sure they can help to direct you to that. But yeah, it's in their materials that they presented to the court. And it doesn't include the application and the affidavit by Tanya Johnson. And if you were to read that, I mean, you would understand why she insisted that I be served with a notice. Because I believe Justice Woodley knew exactly what they were trying to do. And she knew that if I got notice of it, that at least I would know they were trying to get around that requirement again. But they didn't file it with the court. And they never filed the second one with the court. And honestly, that's just, I mean, if they can produce a receipt, that's how easy it is, right?
So your thrust is that this entire thing is based on fraud, so therefore their motion should be dismissed because the underlying foundation of this is fraudulent.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. And I know that no evidence is admissible in this case, but this is why I'm saying it can't be dismissed until we see the evidence. I mean, surely if everything they say is true, okay, this is an estates firm, right? Obviously, they're going to keep a very, very meticulous record of their accounting. So they're going to know, they're going to have a record of when they made the application, what fees were paid into the court for that, you know, what fees were paid into the court for the next motion to get a direct. I heard you actually say to somebody else today in another hearing, you don't just get to ask the court to do things without filing a motion first, right? Right? That's what I'm saying. Ask to see any request that's actually been filed with the court by Hallitabel to get these endorsements. And I don't think you'll find one. There's a letter from Meredith, Kimberly Meredith. But how did Kimberly Meredith get involved in this? She must have been solicited and asked by Hallitabel at some point. But when? Because there was no request filed with the court.
I'm not sure. Isn't Kimberly Meredith the clerk from...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So she's the clerk, and she's asking the judge to make this order. But somebody must have gone to the registrar and asked Kimberly to make that. And allegedly, there's a cover letter that was authored by Hallitabel to accompany the application. We haven't seen this cover letter. What's the cover letter saying? And in the new affidavit that Tanya allegedly has now, she's entirely lying about the estate assets again. And I know that to be a fact. And so does Halla, because she knows what was in the first application. And that's what I mean.
I think I have the gist of your argument. You filed your material. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk to Megan? I'm trying to make sure I have enough time to then, that's why I summarized the underpinnings. I understand you're saying the entire thing is perpetuated by fraud, and that none of this has been properly done, and so I should not be dismissing this claim until they can prove that things have been properly done. I understand that. Is there anything else?
Here's the most recent piece of information, and like, again, does it seem normal to you in Canada's justice system where people are entitled to the right of full disclosure? Is there any reason why I would be compelled to file a claim on August 4th to find out what's going on with an application that was allegedly filed and served on March 24th when an endorsement has come out on May 6th? Is there any reason I shouldn't know anything about that? If Canada's justice system is working the way that it should, and if people really have the right to transparency and full disclosure, is there any reason why anyone should be ambushed with the kind of information that I was ambushed with by these three litigants? I mean, I didn't know any of these things, Your Honor. And they think that this is unmitigated? Like, how else was I going to get her to respond to me? This is just it. I know you are. That's what I'm saying. But like, Ms. Tabel is the one who keeps saying that it's Tanya's lawyer. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
When I speak in this forum, then the other person does not speak. Okay. It is completely within the rules to bring a motion to strike pleadings before production of documents.
You yes. Bring a motion. Oh, no. Yes, I understand that.
I'm still speaking. So when you say that this has been brought and yet none of the evidence has been put forth,
mm-hmm.
This is when these motions to strike are brought. They're before defenses are filed on behalf of the person, because they're saying, look, on the plain face of the claim,
right,
there's no cause of action. So I haven't really heard you deal with that aspect of the fact that there's no cause of action because Ms. Tavel, who is Ms. Johnson's lawyer, owes you no duty of care.
Okay, so again, I disagree with that on the grounds that, as a lawyer, my sister made it very clear to me, Tanya, do you know what the fiduciary obligations are of a trustee in the administration of estate? You need to let me know what the estate assets are, show me some receipts or whatever before you just ask me to trust me and say, hey, Sean, this is the value of the estate, I'm making an application, will you consent? You need to let me know. I said, like, you know, are you going to have someone at least advise you of what your obligations are? I'm entitled to disclosure. Yes, Sean, I'm going to hire a lawyer. Okay, great. So she hires Halla, allegedly, and I'm saying to Halla, I can't consent to this application until I see proof of the estate assets. And instead, she just doesn't respond to me, goes around and says that I'm, you know, basically making it look like I'm being a difficult litigant because I'm asking to see proof of the applications. And I've since learned that they were both fraudulent. They were lying in both applications. And I believe she was entirely aware of this. And she's helping my sister get around court process. And no, I don't think that's the duties of, and that's why I say, yeah, she has a duty of care to me as a member of the public to uphold the rule of law and to make sure that she's filing, like, following the rules of the court. The court tells her to do something, she has to do it. And she hasn't been doing that. That's my argument.
Okay, I understand.
And, oh, sorry, and on Woodley's endorsement, I wanted to readdress Gomery's endorsement. Gomery does identify that there's clearly a cause of action here and that it appears as though the brother and sister are colluding to deprive the primary beneficiary of his the equal share of the trust.
That's a Rule 2, it's a different test, sir.
I understand, but it's on a Rule 2.1.016 ruling, if the Kingdom of Heaven Foundation were not a legal or lawful entity, or the way that it was styled, you know, if it didn't have the power to sue or be sued, that would clearly be grounds under 2.1.016 anyway. So she ruled that it was not on those grounds. And this is what I'm saying. And that she identified for sure that there is a tort and that Michael and Tanya, that it's sufficiently intelligible for at least Michael to respond to it.
Okay, I understand that. Okay, so now it's time for Ms. Sack to give a brief reply. Sean, so, and Ms. Sack will give a reply just based on anything new that was not anticipated. I see we're at 11:30. Ms. Sack, do you know how long? I mean, it would just be very brief.
3 minutes, maybe less.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to deal with the endorsement of Justice Gomery.
I don't have that before me, I don't think.
I can have that uploaded.
Sean, I don't have Justice Gomery's endorsement, so I'm taking it, since you're referring to it, that you wouldn't have any issue with Ms. Sack upvoting it so I can read it.
It's on the record, so, yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
And then, Ms. Sack, can you point me to Justice Woodley's endorsement, where that is in the material?
It is not in the material.
Okay.
So, Sean,
would you have any objection to Justice Woodley's? Again, you refer to these things,
yeah,
and I think it's important that I read them. So I just want to make sure you have no objection to Justice, is it Woodley, W-O-O-D-L-E-Y?
Yes.
Do you have any objection to Justice Woodley's endorsement being uploaded to Case Lines?
Not at all, okay. But I do want to say that I do object to the information that defense counsel wishes to add, that endorsement, unless they're going to provide the rest of the supporting materials that go with it. I mean, because the endorsement references specific other documents, and that is relative information to that endorsement. It's not exclusive and standalone from all that other information that is referenced by the judge in the endorsement. So without that also being present, it's misleading is what I'm saying, and I think that's the intention of providing that endorsement exclusively, was to mislead the court.
No, let's be fair. First of all, it wasn't provided in the original material, and you referred to these endorsements as having some particular meaning for me, and so it's important for me
that
to
one,
review
yeah.
those endorsements. Secondly, I'm not allowed to look at evidence on a pleadings motion, so it would be inappropriate for material filed in relation to those endorsements. I think the endorsements have to stand on their own. I don't know what they say.
Right, but wouldn't an endorsement then be evidence on its own? That's what I'm saying. She's saying on one hand that no evidence is available in this motion, but she wants to include the endorsement as evidence. And so that evidence is incomplete without the rest of it, is what I'm saying.
Okay, and I'll take your position on that, but you have raised these endorsements as somehow already ruling on certain things that I should rule on. For instance, you mentioned that Justice Gomery's endorsement has already allowed the Kingdom of Heaven bound to Sean to proceed. So it's important that I understand what Justice Gomery actually said.
Yes.
Justice Woodley, if the Justice Woodley is referring to material that's not before me, then Justice Woodley's endorsement may or may not have much impact. I don't know what the endorsements say.
Okay.
So given that you refer to them in your argument, I'm trying to be fair to you, sir, because I think it's important if you've taken the time to refer to them,
yeah,
that I actually know what they say.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, I agree with that.
Okay. So, counsel, if you could upload those two to case lines, I would appreciate
it. Yes.
Okay.
And so just on the rule 2.1, in fact, Justice Gomery invited the co-defendants to join in this rule 21 motion with me. So, and as you've identified, Your Honor, completely different test. The other thing is, to the extent that Sean or the kingdom has any issue with service or anything else in relation to the certificate of appointment of a state trustee granted to Tanya, the place in which to deal with that is in that context. The place in which to deal with an accounting from the estate trustee is in that context. Everything that he's talking about and complaining about relates to that proceeding, that context, and there's specific, very specific rules for dealing with requiring a state trustee to pass accounts. All of those things have nothing to do with the claim against my client, who owed no duty whatsoever. He has all the appropriate relief and remedy, and it's not here, it's there.
And
so,
I'm just going to respond to that by saying that's the problem, is that it's not. If due process was being had, you're right, I would agree with everything she says. She's giving the illusion that due process is being had in that situation, and it's not, and that's why I believe she's failed her fiduciary obligation as a lawyer, not to the trust.
Okay. Ms. Sack, is there anything further?
That's it, Your Honor.
Okay. So I am going to reserve this decision. I don't think it will take me very long to make the decision. I have motions the rest of the day, so it will, and we do have a week-long conference next week, so it may be, I'd like to get it to you next week, but it may be the week after, okay? I'm hoping it wouldn't be any longer than the week after next.
Okay.
If it's longer than the week after next, then you know that I'm very backlogged. I will take my time to review everything, I want to thank you both for your submissions.
On a separate matter, Your Honor, then, not regarding this, okay, but just as how much evidence does one need, separate from this matter altogether, in order to take evidence of court fraud to a court justice for criminal charges? Because
you need to seek some legal advice, sir. I really can't give you legal advice.
Well, no, I'm not asking you for legal advice. I'm just saying if a document has not, like, if I know for a fact at this point in time, which I do, that not one document has been filed and processed by the court, meaning it hasn't been entered into the system, that means it hasn't been processed. That literally means there has been zero due process with this estate. Now, I know that 100% for sure. So who then is accountable if it's not Hallettable? That's what I want to know.
Well,
is it the courthouse in Bracebridge? Is that the one that I place on notice for?
I'm certainly not going to tell you who you should put on notice.
Well, somebody's got to be responsible for that.
As a justice, as a Superior Court of Justice,
okay.
I cannot give you advice.
Okay.
And so I cannot, I would highly recommend
But you don't think there's anything suspicious about this particular estate matter not being on the court of record?
I'm not commenting. I've listened to everything. I've taken copious notes. I will render my decision, but I do strongly urge you, before you take any further legal steps, to get some legal advice.
Well, I think it's very, very obvious that there's fraud afoot here, unless, of course, there's some rule that I don't know about that Your Honor isn't telling me, that lawyers are not actually required to file documents with the court. If that's true, then okay, I concede, I lose my position. But I mean, not one document has been filed by Hallettable with the court. And that is a fact, and that's confirmed by the Bracebridge Courthouse as of this morning. So,
okay. Well, I'm going to leave it there.
Okay.
And so I will thank you very much. We're going to take the morning break.
Okay.
So for Mr. Cormier, who is on the next matter, I think Mr. Cormier is the only one here for the next matter. We will come back at, I'm going to come back at 5:55. So we'll take 20 minutes, okay?
Your Honor, just to confirm, we're excused.
Let me just get through this, and then I'll let you out, okay? Mr. Cormier, can you tell me how long you expect to be if it's unopposed?
I do not expect to be very long, Your Honor, for probably 10, 15 minutes.
You may have to go longer because this is the first matter I've heard in this area, so I just want to make sure I understand all of the legislation, okay?
Okay.
All right. So don't hurry and fail to walk me through properly, okay? All right. Everyone who can be excused, who is on the Kingdom of Heaven Found with Sean matter, and the number 3 matter on our docket, it will be starting at 5:12.
Thank you,
Thank you very much.
Court's recess, and we're off record.